details of these stories were fictitious. The kingdom principles are not. Today, they continue to remind us who God is and what he calls us to be a part of and how much he loves us.
Once upon a time, in a land far, far away, those phrases capture our imaginations. Why do they do that? Well, there's a Christian philosopher, James K. Smith, argues that we were created by God to be story beings. He even talks about how we're story animals, hardwired by God to tell and listen and share and live in stories. But the thing about stories is that once they get into our minds and our hearts, they actually can change the way that we might think and the way that we live. But this leads us to a question. If stories capture our imaginations once upon a time or in a land far, far away, what stories or what story are you and I living in and for? You see, we're in a clash of kingdoms. There's really two different kingdom stories in this world. There's one kingdom that is governed by the self. Everything about the self, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, which is all geared around the world, the flesh, and the devil, Satan, sin, and his system. That's one kingdom story. And there's stories about how if you follow the self and the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, then you will live the good life. We hear this story, don't we? We see this story, and we might even live that story. It's on billboards, it's across social media, it's in nearly every video, movie, television show out there. This is the good life. And then there's the other kingdom story, governed not by the self, but by the Christ, Jesus, the Messiah. Faith, hope, and love, life forever in communion with God in his family, God's kingdom family. The question that we have to think about then is, so what is our heart response to the story of the good news in Jesus? What's our heart response, our heart soil like with the gospel story? How do we receive it? How do we respond to this story? So Jesus, he launches out a question in Matthew chapter 12, and he says, who is or who are my mother, my brother, who's in my family? And his mother and his brothers are right there. They're within hearing distance. And there's this massive crowd around. And he says, who are my mother and my brothers? And everybody's wondering, what's Jesus going to say? And then Jesus says, whoever does the will of my Father who is in heaven, he or she is my brother, my sister, my family. You're part of God's family if you follow me. This is a radical call. Jesus kind of throws this out there. If you want to follow me, if you want to be in God's family, entrance into the kingdom, then you have to lay down everything and follow him. This is what he's getting at. This is a radical, costly discipleship. To follow him is to believe not in the self, the world, the flesh, and the devil, Satan, sin, and a system, or the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, but instead believe in him, and then you enter into God's kingdom family, and then you begin to follow this Jesus. This is what Jesus throws out to this massive crowd here. And they're, whoa, wait, that's the family? Because there's this clash of kingdoms going on. And then, because Jesus is the master storyteller, he then gives them this parable, this short story, so that what he's just pointed out, this truth about the heart response to the good news of the kingdom, churns in their mind and sinks down to their heart, and they can't get it out of their mind. And they're going to think about it and churn on it, and it'll lead to a response. And so I want us to turn today to Matthew chapter 13. You've just heard the setting of this in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 13, and we're in this series in the parables, and this is a parable that most of you are probably familiar with, but I think that this morning we're going to rediscover, or maybe discover for the first time, something here that you've never maybe seen before or heard before. You see, in this clash of kingdoms, we're prone to wander into doubt. Yeah, even as Christ followers. By that, I mean, we're prone to believe in or trust in our own intellect, what we can comprehend, our own value system. We value something more, our logic, what we understand. Or we're prone to be indecisive. That is, we might believe or make loud praise and joy to God, immediately receive this good news about Jesus, but then very quickly when suffering or tribulation or affliction or persecution comes, we get really shaky. And then also we're prone to be duped, deceived into the way of wealth and riches and pleasures of this world, because we think maybe that is the good life. And so Jesus launches this parable, and the word parable means to kind of throw alongside. That's really what the Greek word means. Throw alongside. Para means along. Balo means to throw. And so, like, alongside the truth that he's just launched out to this massive crowd. If you want to be in God's family, you have to lay everything aside and do the will of the Father. And the will of the Father was what? Listen to Jesus. What did the Father say from the heavens upon the baptism of Jesus? This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. The Mount of Transfiguration. This is my Son. Listen to him, right? And so Jesus is going to unveil truth for them. So Matthew chapter 13, are you there? Matthew chapter 13, verse 1. Now listen. Listen here. That day, that very day, with all the crowds around, Jesus went out of the house and was sitting by the sea. And the large crowds gathered to him. They flow out of the little village on to the shoreline. So he got into a boat and sat down, and the whole crowd was standing on the beach. And Jesus is going to use the natural reverberation that will reflect off of the water to project his voice out to the crowd. So they're standing along the Sea of Galilee. And he spoke many things to them in parables, in these short stories, saying, "Behold, the sower went out to sow." And in the Greek, "behold" is adu, which means look, look. And so out, if you have ever been by the Sea of Galilee or you've seen pictures around that area, you'll see these slopes, these hillsides near the shoreline that are farm fields. And so he probably said, look, and there was somebody sowing seed even at that very moment. Look, look. And then he tells them, "The sower went out to sow," not S-E-W, S-O-W, "to spread seed, and he sowed some seeds, fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate them up. Others fell on the rocky places where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up because they had no depth of soil. But when the sun had risen, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Others fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them out, and others fell on the good soil and yielded a crop, a harvest, some a hundredfold, some 60, and some 30. He who has ears, let him hear. Have you heard?" do you hear? You see, what we hear will determine how we respond. And hearing all throughout the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Mark, and seeing, hearing and seeing is a metaphor really of what do you perceive? What do you understand about this? So the crowds are hearing, what is this all about? Some seed over here, some seed over here, some seed over here. What we see or what we hear will determine also the kind and the quantity of the crop. 100-fold, he says, and some 60 and some 30. Those are miraculous quantities of harvest at this time. And so the crowd hears this story. They're even maybe picturing it happening on the hillside. And then the disciples who are the 12 and maybe also others with them, because we hear other times when there's 70 disciples that were sent out by Jesus. So it might have been 70. But the 12 are there, for sure we know that. And the disciples came and said to him, why do you speak to them in parables? Why are you using these short stories that are sort of mysterious? Jesus said to them, I tell you, it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted. For whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. For whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables, these stories thrown alongside, an indirect way of communicating truth. Because while seeing, they do not see. And while hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. Pause that. Think about that for a minute. They are seeing these amazing works from Jesus, but they're not perceiving who Jesus is. You can read through the Gospels. You can experience, maybe by story, the works of the power of God, and you still don't personally perceive who he really is and what he means for your life. Massive crowds experiencing the lame walking, the blind seeing, the leper healed, and people are going, who is this guy? And they hear what he's saying, these amazing truths that confound the wisest. The Pharisees and the Sadducees don't know how to respond to this guy, and they're trained in this schematic called challenge and riposte. They're trained to debate with people, and they can't debate with Jesus. And the crowds are going, who is he? I don't know. They don't understand. Well, this is all actually to fulfill the prophecy, the word of God given to the prophet Isaiah. And so Jesus says in verse 14, in their case, the prophecy of Isaiah is being fulfilled, which says, you will keep on hearing, but you will not understand. You will keep on seeing, but will not perceive. But the heart, there's our word. I've highlighted that, underlined that. But the heart of this people has become dull. With their ears, they scarcely hear, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they would see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their, say it with me, their heart, and return, and I would heal them. We think of heart as the cardiovascular system, right? And Craig is a nurse over there, right? And you think of the heart as the heart, and maybe the, you know, our emotions may be beat from the, well, the way that the first century Jews in Hebrew culture thought of the heart is much more than just a physical part, but the very center, the core, and the seat of their emotions and their will. Everything flows from out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? It's the seat of your emotions, the center of your will, what drives you. But their heart has become dull, and they don't hear and they don't see. Here he is, Jesus, the Messiah, speaking and performing amazing miracles, and the people don't understand. Now, this is fulfilling the prophecies of God given that national Israel would reject the Messiah. Some of these very people who are hearing these stories are the ones who would later shout out, "Give us Barabbas!" And we go, "Wow, I can't imagine that." We would do the same thing if we were in their sandals. Don't miss that. We are not somehow specially privileged and better than they were in their hearts. If we're honest with ourselves, our hearts are dull too, aren't they? Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. And yet we see Jesus working and we hear what Jesus says. Do you hear? He who has ears, let him hear. So Jesus has told them the story and then he's given them the reason for the story. Now they're kind of going, what's the meaning of this story? What is it? We heard it. We know now why you gave it, but what does it really mean? And there's lots of people who have explained a lot of different ways, but Jesus gives us his own commentary on it. So I'm going to listen to Jesus here. Verse 18, hear then the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom, and does not understand it, comprehend it in their logic, in their brain, the evil one comes and snatches it away. He snatches away what has been sown in his heart. This is the one on whom seed was sown beside the road. Oh, look back at that, yeah. Oh, the seed that fell beside the road, the birds came and ate it up. It didn't even take root. We're going to see three or four D-related responses to this, just for memory device. The first one is doubtful. And this is the person who hears or sees the good news of Jesus, but they are doubtful in that they rely on their own logic, their own comprehension, their own intellect, and when something doesn't make sense, no, I'm not buying into that. But they value something else other than Jesus. They value their perspective, their comprehension. Maybe they have lots of letters after their names, maybe they don't. One way or another, they hear it and they don't believe it. And therefore, they don't understand it, and therefore, they don't receive it, and it takes no root. Then Jesus continues. So the first one is what? The doubtful heart response. The one, verse 20, the one on whom seed was sown on the rocky places. This is the man who, by the way, there's lots of rocky places in Judea, Palestine. Rocks everywhere. This was common. This is what people would understand. This one on whom the seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word. He hears the logos. He hears the message of Jesus, and immediately receives it with joy. He's carrying, or she's carrying out a giant study Bible on the front row, hands raised, shouting praises to God, loving Jesus, making a big splash. Nothing wrong with that. Yet, he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. Ooh. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. There's this temporary. This is the indecisive person. Whoa, this was great. I bought into this. This is so awesome. I feel so good. I'm so happy now. I got peace. I got joy. I've been looking for this all my life. Wait a minute. Now suddenly people are opposed to me or life is going sour. I thought this was the way to the good life. And I'm not getting a good life out of this deal? Ah, scrap it. Sold my study Bible in the garage sale. I heard a story once told. True story. A friend of mine went to a garage sale. Somebody was there selling all their Bibles and all their commentaries, everything. I said, whoa, what's going on here? The owner of the house, the man selling all his stuff, was a pastor before and scrapped it all. Huh. That doesn't make us any better. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. When suffering, when trouble, when trial, when there's $1.50 in the bank account and you thought God was going to bless you with an easier life, when you follow Jesus and your spouse leaves you, when you follow Jesus, you make hard decisions and your kids don't like you anymore. When your friends in your workplace now don't pay attention to you because you aren't doing the same things you were doing before with them. You heard the word, you received the word, and now your life stinks. What, Jesus? What are you doing here? Have you rejected me? And I was challenged by one of my teachers this last week. And he said, was Jesus doing the will of the Father? Yeah, he was doing the will of the Father. And he died hungry, naked, thirsty, doing the will of the Father. Ooh. This call to radical, costly discipleship. Who are my mother, my brothers, the one who does the will of the Father? Ooh. But that is the abundant life. See, Jesus flips everything on its head. And that's what these parables do. And that's what's churning in our minds right now. So doubtful, indecisive, now deceived. And verse 22, and the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns. This is the man who hears the word and the worry of the world or the anxiousness or anxieties, the pressures, the stressors of this life. Have you felt that this week? Right? The worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke out the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Wait a minute, that means that this person had some fruit showing up in their life. But when anxiety, stressors come, they go to the escapes of the value system of the rule of the flesh and the devil. The lust of the flesh, the pride of life, to try to escape the worries or the anxieties, the pressures, or they look to the riches and pleasures of this world and they say, no, that's what's going to give me the good life. That's what's going to get me out of this pressure, out of this pain, or out of this stress. I've got to do something else. Jesus isn't measuring up. What that ultimately says of our hearts is that we're saying, I don't really believe right now, Jesus, that you are going to come through to give me what I need for my life to be what my life wants it to be. What I want, what I think I need, you're not coming through, so I'm going to go some other route. And it's the deception. We're duped into it. And the temptations, the seduction is all around us. It's right there at our fingertips on our smartphone and on every screen and in every mag. If you get this, if you take this, if you drink this, if you smoke this, if you have this, if you shoot this, if you buy this, if you get this, if you earn this, then you'll have life. And we're diverted off the path of life. And then there's no fruit. Doubtful, indecisive, deceived, or number four, decided. Verse 23, and the one on whom seed was sown on the good soil, this is the man who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. Again, a miraculous quantity of harvest that God is bringing out by this person who hears the word and receives it, understands it, follows into the message of Jesus Christ, and God bears fruit, brings it forth. Jesus has a plan for us bearing fruit. It's in John chapter 15. He says, abide in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. Whoever abides in me will bear fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. No fruit. No fruit at all comes without Jesus. You want to live the good life? the ultimately true abundant life, it's only found through Jesus. Now, some people have looked at this parable and think, oh, this is a passage about evangelism, and so we just spread the seed, broadcast the seed of the gospel, and expect varying results. Now, that's true by application, but that's not what this means. I might have even preached that like that in the past. And this is shared in different places, other gospels. It's also not really about moral conformity. If I could just work to understand more about this, then I'll figure this out. No, it's not about that either. Jesus is speaking to a Jewish audience, and the Gospel of Matthew is written to a Jewish audience, people who will reject the Messiah for who he is. They'll see and they'll hear and they won't believe it and won't receive it. But some will. He's writing about discipleship, not moral conformity, not evangelism. This is a call to follow him. Yeah, believe, that's entrance into God's family, but follow him all the way to the cross, all the way where he will be naked, thirsty, hungry, bleeding out, and through that give us life. And so Jesus is talking about discipleship here, which means then if I look at these four soils, then I see in myself, and maybe you see in yourself, honest before God. You don't have to tell the person next to you, but somewhere in all of this, in the doubt or in the decisiveness or in the deception, at some point, even maybe every day, you in your heart, your soil is hard. Do you agree? Where you trust your own intellect. And you say, I don't really accept this. I do sometimes, but not right now. So I'll do that. Or indecisively, trouble comes, affliction, suffering. I'm going to run a different direction for peace. Or chase the mad rat's race towards pleasures and riches of the world. Or try to escape the anxieties and the worries of the world, and you run that direction in all kinds of ways. Could be through just soaking in constant entertainment on Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Plus, Prime, whatever it is, Disney Plus, I don't know. You know, sitting in front of the TV or scrolling for hours on your phone or something to try to just dull yourself, right, to escape. But then you're here and you're, I'm decided. I'm decided that I'm going to follow Jesus. So these are decisions, heart responses on the soil of our heart to the gospel seeds that we actually need to make every day. Not in our own strength, because it's through God's mercy that we even can consider and hear and perceive it at all. By God's grace can we receive, hear, perceive and approach him in humility. And when we do that, Jesus is right there in that moment saying, abide in me, I am the vine. Even a tiny faith receives the full Jesus. Borrowed that from a friend. Thank you, Stephanie, for that. She's out with a baby right now. Right now, you're like, I got this much faith, and I'm relying on this kind of logic, or I'm running over here to try to escape. Jesus is right there, right now, ready to receive you, wanting and desiring for your life to bear good fruit. To bear good fruit. Are you dealing with doubt or indecisiveness or deception? What it will be the response of your heart soil to the gospel seed. There was a young boy named Daniel. He's born to a unwed teenage mom in the poverty neighborhoods of Los Angeles. They'd bounce from house to house, place to place, school to school. Drugs and alcohol, abuse, trauma seemed to be kind of everyday occurrences in Daniel's little life. When he was 5 years old, they had a tiny little house and his mom was living in the house, but there wasn't room for Daniel, or they didn't want Daniel to be in the house to see what was going on in the house. I'm not for sure on that. So they put Daniel as a five-year-old to live and sleep in a little tiny broken-down shed out back. One day, a young couple, noticed that little Daniel was living in this tiny shed, and they came and they asked his mom, could Daniel come and live with us, maybe just temporarily? They told this young mom that they were Christian, so for some reason she was more comfortable with temporary giving them her five-year-old son. She had no way to care for herself, or didn't know how to care for herself or how to care for her son. And so for 2 months, little Daniel went and lived with this young couple with three kids of their own in their own small house. And he remembered the peace that he had there in that home, and that they had dinner together every night, and then the dad would come in and read Bible stories to the children at bedtime. And that was this vivid, bright spot in his memory that he kept on there, even though he was only 5 years old. Well, just 2 months, he stayed there. And then he was taken over to live with an uncle, then a grandma, and then years and years of up and down. At a young age, he got into drugs and alcohol, serious drug addiction problems. At 19 years old, he decides he's going to join the army, try to pave a way for his life. 6 months into the army, he's stationed at Fort Campbell near Clarksville, Tennessee, and he goes AWOL with his, you know, new recruitment bonus cash stuffed in his pockets. He thinks 22 grand, you know, just a ton of money, and so he charges back to California, parties it all away, total mess, AWOL, and somebody he knows invites him to church in the middle of that. And he shows up to church kind of like this, and he hears the good news of Jesus. And in that moment, the Holy Spirit drew him to salvation in Christ. And then about a year later, he's still AWOL. He got pulled over and look up his record, and they say, you're AWOL. Long story, truncated, he ends up getting released after some jail time, not yet addressing the army, and he finally tells his pastor, I've been AWOL for almost 3 years, and God's convicting me to go back and turn myself in to Fort Campbell. And he's expecting the worst, you know, years in Leavenworth. I mean, guys are going to the brig for just going AWOL for 3 weeks. He's been gone for 3 years. Okay. He comes back, turns himself in, and he expects this is going to be so bad. They eventually go through the chain of command. He's standing before a full-bird colonel, and this man says, tell me your story. So Dan tells him his story. I was this, and I was this, and then I came to Jesus, and he's totally changed my life, and God told me to come here and turn myself in. And the full-bird colonel miraculously expunges his record, erases it. He does no jail time, sends him back to his unit, a soldier. And then he's deployed to Afghanistan, combat veteran. For a little while, gets sucked back into alcoholism, comes back to the U.S., PTSD, alcoholism, is in a rehab center, meets a young girl, eventually would be his wife. Young kids, really. They come, renew their walk to Jesus. He senses God's call into ministry. 30 years later, so Dan is now 35, he's driving around Los Angeles, and he's like, I wonder if I could find that tiny shed. So he drives in that neighborhood, and he goes to where, oh, there, I think that's the house. Oh, the shed is gone. Good thing. It was run down 30 years ago. And then he said, I wonder if I could find that house where that family took me in. I wonder if they still live there. And so he drives around because it was nearby, and he's like, ah, oh, I think it was one off the corner, and it's there. And he finds this house. I think this one is it. And out front is this little sign that says, Faith, Family, Love. And he's like, what? Maybe, but it's been 30 years. Does he still live in the house? I'm probably not. So he goes up and he knocks on the door and hears some commotion in the house, but nobody comes to the door. You know how that is. Dog barking, something noise. And you're like, this is awkward. So he rings the doorbell again. Nobody comes. And then a teenage boy comes around the side of the driveway and says, hey. And I'm like, yeah, I was. And he goes, hey, Mom, somebody's at the door. They want to talk to you. And the kid disappears again. And then the door opens and this lady comes and she says, can I help you? And he said, did you live in this house 30 years ago? And she said, yes. And did you take in a little boy who was 5 years old for a couple months? And the woman burst into tears and said, Daniel? And with tears flowing, he rolls out his story, and she's sobbing, and he's crying, and she says, I walk around every day around this block, and I walk by that place where you lived in that little shed, and for the last 30 years, every single day, I've been praying for you, Daniel. For 30 years, every single day, I've been praying that you'd come to Jesus. Daniel was my roommate for the last 2 weeks in our doctor of ministry program. And this young couple just took a step to say, this is really kind of radical. We got three young kids and our little house, maybe 2 months, we'll take in this little boy. This one bright, vivid memory in his mind. God might work and call you to take a big step or a small step. But in every step, no matter how big or how small, God can work in amazing, huge ways. Fruit. Good fruit. Dan is now an associate pastor at a really large church in Phoenix, Arizona, and he shares the gospel with people, thousands of people, every single week. And that woman just welcomed him into her home to love him for 2 months and prayed for him then every day. What is your heart response to the gospel seed? Doubtful, indecisive, deceived, or decided?